Good morning and welcome to From Me to You on Hippie Radio 94.5. This is Richard Courtney. And Susan, you have written a book called The Maharishi and Me.
Yes, that's right. Maharishi and Me, Seeking Enlightenment with the Beatles Guru.
This is a period of time that all of us have heard about, all of us that are interested in the Beatles. We know some things that happened, but with your book, The Maharishi and Me, Seeking Enlightenment with the Beatles Guru, you tell us everything about the Beatles. And first, I think it would be interesting for all of us to understand, who exactly is this Maharishi fellow?
Maharishi Mahesh Yogi was a guru from India. When he arrived on the shores of America in 1959, there was no such thing as mantra, meditation, yoga. None of these terms existed in the West. Within 10 years, Maharishi had made these into household words. And with, I might add, a lot of help from the Beatles, he taught transcendental meditation. He was the founder of transcendental meditation.
Because some things are lost in all of this. He founded transcendental meditation. He was the founder of TM.
Yes, he was.
And George Harrison, until the day he died, followed him. Is that correct?
I wouldn't say that he followed him until the day he died. Because after he left India, Maharishi's ashram in India in 1968, not too long after that, he became a Hare Krishna devotee. He joined ISKCON, which is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, founded by Prabhupada. So his guru was Prabhupada during that period of time.
Oh.
But in fact, he perhaps practiced transcendental meditation later in his life. He did say that he did continue to practice it.
Because I heard late interviews with him where he would say, the Maharishi said, but this Maharishi Mahesh Yogi is the Maharishi. I mean, he's the only Maharishi, or do other people have that title?
There are other people that have that title, but anyone that George Harrison would be referring to as Maharishi would be Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. Yes.
Yes.
So in 1992, George Harrison held a concert in London, along with Ringo and Eric Clapton, for the benefit of Maharishi Mahesh Yogi's ill-fated Natural Law political party. And in fact, strangely, Maharishi had asked George and Paul and Ringo to stand as members of parliament for Liverpool in that Natural Law party.
And when you say ill-fated, what do you mean by that?
The Natural Law political party really didn't go anywhere, although it was just another one of Maharishi's very interesting schemes that he would dream up. So he was trying to create this political party, and he had candidates in many nations, in fact, and England was one of them.
I learned from your book, and even what I learned from listening to George Harrison interviews, is that since he was the founder of TM and he was a guru, and what qualifications would one have to become a guru?
I don't know. There's no official particular qualifications that a person needs to become a guru. But traditionally in India, the idea of guru, in fact, the word itself is a Sanskrit word. It comes from two roots, gu and ru, which mean light and darkness. And so what it means is a person who brings light to the darkness. A person who enlightens people, who brings them to higher consciousness, who brings them to spiritual awakening and enlightenment.
And we who study the Beatles know that, or at least as I understand it, Patty Boyd was the first one, or Patty Harrison, to come in contact with Maharishi, or to at least observe him and become aware of him. And then she encouraged the others to go to a conference. Is that right?
Yes. In February of 1967, Patty Boyd learned transcendental meditation. She did not meet Maharishi, but she learned TM in London. And then told George about it. And George said, well, I want my own mantra. sounds like George. So they went to see Maharishi August 24th of 1967 in London at the Hilton Hotel. And they brought some of their friends with them.
And
so that's where they all met Maharishi.
And then there's the infamous trip to Wales where Cynthia Lennon was left at the train station.
Exactly. But she did get a ride with Neil Aspinall, so it wasn't, you know, all bad. So she did end up going to Wales, and there they learned transcendental meditation August 25th of 1967. That retreat in Wales was supposed to last for 10 days, And it did last for 10 days, but unfortunately, the Beatles had to leave after 2 days because August 27th, Brian Epstein passed away.
Right.
And they had to return to London.
The interviews that we have seen were of the Beatles' reaction to Brian's death were in Wales. And to me, I was always grateful that they were with the Maharishi at the time because he did tend to give them good advice on how to handle the death of a loved one, it appeared.
He did, and in fact, George even commented about how he was happy that he was there with Maharishi and that they found a lot of comfort in being with him at that very devastating time in their lives.
Being a Beatles show, from time to time, we have to play some music, and in particular the Beatles, but on this show, we'll play some Donovan. Your book is incredible, and I wonder, you'll hear me often refer to this book. Maharishi and Me is highly recommended. I mean, it's, if any of you are Beatles fans, and you want to understand what happened and why there is a white album or was a white album, it's because of their time with the Maharishi and with our author, Susan Shumsky, and our guest who's with us today. Let's talk about Donovan for a minute, and maybe we can jump into Jennifer Juniper. Tell us about Donovan and that song and who Jenny is.
Jenny Boyd. That's Patty Boyd's sister, and they were both models and actresses in London at the time. And Patty Boyd was George Harrison's wife, and Jenny Boyd, Patty's sister, she also learned TM, and she went to India as well. So Jennifer Juniper, he wrote that for Jenny Boyd because he had a crush on her.
And, so she was there with the Beatles. But
yes.
And Donovan had already met her prior.
Yes, he had known her prior, yes. And she had a boutique there in London. And
let's listen to
it's a great song.
Jennifer Juniper. That's Donovan, who accompanied the Beatles to Rishikesh, and we are talking with Susan Shumsky, who is the author of one of the best books I've read on the Beatles, The Maharishi and Me. You have more insight than anyone I know. So the Beatles were there with Donovan and also Mike Love of the Beach Boys.
Exactly.
And
Mia Farrow.
Mia Farrow.
And Prudence Farrow.
Of course, John Lennon eventually would write the song Sexy Sadie, which was really originally titled Maharishi. Let's just talk about all of this for a minute, because this is where a lot of, and Dear Prudence, and I think there's a lot of misinformation floating around out there about Sexy Sadie, Dear Prudence, exactly who Prudence was. I never knew her background until I read your book. So let's talk about Prudence, who is the sister of Mia Farrow, of course. And you just explain all, lay it all out for us.
Prudence started Transcendental Meditation in 1965. She actually learned 2 years earlier than I did, but she's exactly the same age as me. So she kept applying also for teacher training again and again and again, and she kept getting rejected. Finally, it was 1967, near the end of that year, and Prudence was talking her sister into TM, trying to get her sister into Transcendental Meditation. Finally, Mia agreed to learn TM, and she said she wanted to learn it from Maharishi, though. So she met with Maharishi, and he said, well, you should come to this course that I'm doing, starting in January of 1968. And he also met with Prudence. He gave Prudence special permission to come with her sister, even though she was too young, supposedly, for the course, but he gave her permission to go. So Maharishi, Prudence, and Mia all flew to India together from Boston. And so they arrived in India together on January 24th of 1968. And immediately, as soon as they arrived, Maharishi started showering a lot of favor upon Mia.
And not Prudence, and but Mia.
Yes, because yeah. She's a celebrity. Yeah. He would call her during meetings and embarrass her. She had just learned TM, by the way. She learned TM on their way to the course. She learned in Mumbai when they stopped in Mumbai at a hotel. That's where she learned TM from Maharishi. So she wasn't like the other participants who were there to become teachers and who were meditating many hours a day. She was only doing her twice a day, 20 minutes twice a day meditation because she had just learned. So she said that she was bored out of her skull, and she likened the ashram to a graveyard. So, you know, she really didn't like being there. She would take a book and go sit by the Ganges. She would go off and go shopping. And she was kind of unhappy there. And besides, Maharishi was showering all this attention on her, and she thought he was a sycophant, and she just didn't appreciate it very much.
Yeah. The story goes that the Maharishi actually made sexual advances toward Prudence, and that's why she went into hiding, and that's why John wrote the song Dear Prudence. But that's not true, is it?
Oh, no, that's totally not true. Oh, boy. Who is spreading that rumor? Oh, my gosh.
About 1,000 okay. different books.
Oh, my gosh. That's nuts. Okay. All right. It was a pharaoh that Maharishi did pass at, but it wasn't Prudence. It was Mia. And how that happened was, it was, she had left, you know, she was bored. So she left and went on a little animal safari. And then she came back in time. She actually promised to come back in time for her birthday. And Maharishi made a big birthday celebration for her and made her sit up on the stage and put a silver crown on her head. And then that night, he did what's called a puja ceremony with Mia in his cave beneath his house. He had a basement that was called the cave. It was lined with Ganges rocks. And that was a place where Maharishi did meditation and did pujas and that sort of thing. Puja means, that's a traditional ceremony in India. And puja ceremony is done for any person who learns transcendental meditation. The teacher, first of all, performs this puja ceremony that's done in Sanskrit. So he did this ceremony. He traditionally did that for people on their birthday. Because I was on his staff for many years, he did it for me every birthday. So he did the ceremony. And apparently, Mia, she reported that he had made a pass at her. And in fact, she also reiterated that her autobiography that she wrote 30 years later. That night, after her birthday ceremony, she told a small group of people that he you know, I'm leaving tomorrow. He's not holy. He made a pass at me. And they said, what? You know, people just, they couldn't believe her and asked her what happened. And she said, oh, he stroked my hair. And they said, well, that's not a pass. And she said, with a lot of expletives, as she was describing it, she said, I know a pass from a puja. So
that's pretty cool.
She did leave the next day. She walked out in a huff, but she did return as soon as she found out the Beatles were coming. All right, so she returned. She went to Goa to visit her brother who was there, taking drugs with the hippies that were staying there in Goa. But then she heard that Maharishi had brought the Beatles there. So she and her sister were supposed to return to Rishikesh. Her sister went to get her down in Delhi. And they were supposed to return to Rishikesh, and they were in a taxi cab. And Mia asked the taxi driver to take them to the airport to greet the Beatles. So Prudence really liked meditation. All she wanted to do was meditate. So while Prudence was meditating in the car, Mia jumped out of the car, ran over to John and Cynthia Lennon's car, jumped in their car, and went with them to Rishikesh and left her sister behind without even saying goodbye.
And her sister struggled with mental illness, apparently. Is that
she did. And it was very serious, actually.
Yeah, yeah, and she was having some LSD flashbacks and just some horrible things, and Maharishi was trying to help her through those. Anyway, for now, let's just play Dear Prudence, since we haven't played a song in a while. All right, here's Dear Prudence off the White Album, which happened because the Beatles went to Rishikesh, I think, anyway. Okay, that's John Lennon, Dear Prudence, off the White Album, an album that Derek Taylor, the press secretary, says is not a Beatles album at all. It's four different Beatles. And here's what I find interesting about all this, and you know more about the Beatles and Maharishi and Rishikesh than anyone, but the Beatles come out of there with more songs than they've ever had. You mentioned in your book that John wrote that the TM really opened him and he was able to write more songs than he had in years. Paul had the same thing. He goes to George one day or something and says, I'm going to go write songs. And George is irritated because he says, we're not here to write songs. We're here to meditate. And
that's right.
This is your writing. That's how I know that. We're speaking with Susan Chomsky, who's the author of The Maharishi and Me, a highly recommended book. But George, throughout his life, still practiced meditation. Is that right?
Yes, he did. Yeah. He was very much into meditation. He really first got into Eastern philosophy, Eastern wisdom, around the time when we were all taking LSD and we were all getting into the idea of nirvana and experiencing higher consciousness. And he was one of us. He was a flower child like the rest of us. He was studying sitar with Ravi Shankar, who was a famous sitarist back then. That really helped in his spiritual development, spiritual awakening. So he was very, very keen on TM, and really he brought the other Beatles into it. And the reason why they went to India was because of George, really.
Right, and Patty. Well, Patty's sort of leading the way. So they were open to those kinds of things. So we'd like to thank the Omni Nashville Hotel and Kitchen Notes Restaurant for bringing us The Maharishi and Me, Susan Chomsky, one of the best books I've ever read, the best book certainly on that time in India. And we'll be back after we have a little bit of curry for breakfast. Welcome back to From Me to You. We have Claudine Iannucci here running the show, executive producer, and we have Leela Smith here. And we're speaking with Susan Chomsky, who's written a book called The Maharishi and Me, Seeking Enlightenment with the Beatles Guru. What's interesting to me is, as far as TM goes, it's been your book, again, The Maharishi and Me, is so interesting because not being a person that's that knowledgeable about it, you mentioned that even the Beatles and John would meditate for up to 8 hours a day.
They did. In fact, they were competing as to who would meditate the longest. They had a little contest going.
I think you said Prudence meditated for 5 straight days, right?
Yes, she did. And it was very difficult to get her to come out of her room. And that's the reason why the song Dear Prudence came about, because she was staying in the same complex with John and George. And Maharishi asked John to just look in on her and make sure she was okay. So John wrote that song, Dear Prudence, asking her to come out and play and so on. And that was to try to coax her out of her room, actually, get her to open up her eyes. But in fact, strangely enough, Prudence doesn't even remember them singing that song to her. She remembers them singing, bursting into her room and singing Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band and also Obla-Dee, Obla-Da.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until they left India, they were leaving India, and George said to Prudence, hey, John wrote this song about you. And then it wasn't until the record came out that she even knew about the song, but she was very happy that she was afraid they insulted her in the song. So she was very happy that it was a really upbeat and positive song about her. It was very sweet, actually.
Yeah, it's a beautiful
song. And Prudence did have a mental breakdown when she was in India, but Maharishi really helped her to come out of that. And ever since then, she's been very healthy, mentally healthy. So she was on several courses while I was there. She was there. She was there in 1970 on my course, and she came back several other times. And she has a lovely family. She teaches meditation, she teaches yoga, and she teaches Sanskrit. So she has a wonderful life.
Tell us a little about the song Bungalow Bill.
Bungalow Bill is a real person. Bungalow Bill is a real story about Nancy Jackson and her son Rick. And Nancy Jackson was a woman who actually was assigned to take care of Mia Farrow there. And she was a socialite. And her son was a collegiate kid, an Ivy League kind of kid. And he's described quite well in Bungalow Bill because he's Bungalow Bill. Rick is Bungalow Bill. And so he came to visit his mother at the ashram. Nancy Jackson was his mother, and she was meditating at the ashram. She was taking teacher training there. Actually, she already was a teacher, but she was there on the course. So they went out on a little safari, but this wasn't just a safari to look at animals. It was a hunting safari. So they rode out on elephants, and the elephants drove the tigers into the kill zone, quote unquote, and they were up on a platform, and it was easy pickings for them to shoot the tiger. And Nancy spotted the tiger, and Rick shot the tiger. So this song, the continuing story of Bungalow Bill, is a very accurate description of what happened when they went out to shoot the tiger. And when they came back from their tiger hunt, they came to Maharishi's bungalow, and Patty and John and some other, the Beatles party, were there, and they were describing the kill to Maharishi, believe it or not. They're describing their tiger hunt to a vegetarian yogi from India. You can imagine what his reaction was to that. So Rick says he'd never seen Maharishi that angry in his life, and Maharishi was just glaring at Rick as he was telling the story. Maharishi said to him, "So you have the desire, and now that desire is finished?" And Rick said, I will never kill, you know, I'll never do that again. And John Lennon piped in and said, "Well, it's a little bit life destructive, isn't it?" By the way, that's a common phrase that Maharishi used to always use. And Maharishi reiterated, "Yes, it's life destructive, finished." So then Nancy tried to defend her son and said, "Well, it was either the tiger or us," which is completely not true because,
right.
You know, they were on a tiger hunt. And so that is even expressed in the song. The entire incident is expressed in the song.
Well, that's amazing. Let's listen to Buffalo Rick, or better known as the continuing story of Bungalow Bill from the White Album, John Lennon.
Hey, Bungalow Bill, what did you kill? Bungalow Bill. Hey, Bungalow Bill, what did you kill? Hunting with his elephant and gun. In case of accidents, he always took his mom. He's the all-American bullet-headed Saxon mother's son.
All the children sing,
"Hey, Bungalow Bill, what did you kill? Bungalow Bill.
Captain Marvel zapped him right between the eyes.
All the children sing,
"Hey, Bungalow Bill, what did you kill? Bungalow Bill. Hey, Bungalow Bill, what did you kill? Bungalow Bill."
The children asked him if to kill was not a sin. His mommy betted him.
If looks could kill, it would have been us instead of him.
All the children sing,
"Hey, Bungalow Bill, what did you kill? Bungalow Bill. Hey, Bungalow Bill, what did you kill? Bungalow Bill.
That's John Lennon with Yoko Ono in there, and you write in your book that John drew had a drawing that included Yoko that he gave to one of the other participants. Is that right?
Yeah, for his birthday. Yeah, that's true. And later on, it was Paul Horn, actually. Paul Horn was a famous flutist. And later on, Paul was looking at the picture, and he realized it was a picture of Yoko Ono. Obviously, he didn't know who Yoko Ono was at the time that he was given the picture, but yeah.
And I've read lately that John would often sneak away to the post office and send Yoko letters while he was there at the ashram with Cynthia.
Yeah, now the thing was, he was there with Cynthia at the ashram. They arrived together, obviously. But 2 weeks after they arrived, he moved out of the room with Cynthia, moved into his own room, and spent the entire time reveling in letters and telegrams from Yoko Ono.
Wow.
And he had wanted to bring Yoko and Cynthia both to the ashram.
Oh, that would have been
But he
nice.
Couldn't figure out how to... Yeah, that would have been great. So what happened was he just basically ignored Cynthia the entire time. She was completely heartbroken. She had thought this was going to be a second honeymoon for them. So it was very disturbing. It was just devastating for Cynthia.
So there's
and
a little
by the way,
there's a little foreshadowing on the Yoko thing then. When she came
yes.
back from Italy and Greece, that and John was Yoko was there in her bathrobe. That's not the first she ever heard of this.
Yes, so when they left India and they were flying back to London, John got very drunk on the plane and he admitted all of his infidelities to Cynthia. And she was in complete shock because she had thought that John was completely loyal and faithful to her for their entire marriage.
Holy cow. She really had the blinders on.
Definitely.
And when the Maharishi began calling themselves the Beatles guru?
He did call himself the Beatles teacher. On a record album in 1967. And the Beatles were not happy about that because they hadn't given him permission to do that.
Hurdy-Gurdy Man is a popular Donovan tune, and Donovan was there at the Beatles. Tell us about that song and what that's all about.
The Hurdy-Gurdy Man actually was written about Maharishi. So the Hurdy-Gurdy Man who's singing songs of love, you know, the roly-poly man, that's Maharishi Mahesh Yogi singing songs of love.
Let's listen to Donovan's version of Hurdy-Gurdy Man, a song he wrote about the Maharishi.
Thrown like a star in my vast sleep, I opened my eyes to take a peep, to find that I was by the sea, gazing with tranquility. Just then when the Hurdy-Gurdy Man came singing songs of love. Then when the hurdy-gurdy man came singing songs of love. Hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy sang. Hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy sang. Hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy sang. Histories of ages past, unenlightened shadows cast down through all eternity, the crying of humanity. 'Tis then when the hurdy-gurdy man comes singing songs of love. Then when the hurdy-gurdy man comes singing songs of love.
That's Donovan, who is along with the Beatles in Rishikesh for their tour. And we know the way this all happened, we've talked about that earlier in the show. They went and they're there. But Ringo, of course, suffered from peritonitis as a child and later. And so he had taken Heinz beans to eat. But as I understand it from your book, not as I understand it, as I read this beautiful book, he and Maureen were not thrilled with the total environment, and in particular as it pertains to insects.
Yeah, I mean, mainly Maureen. Maureen was terrified of insects. It was in the jungle. The ashram was in the jungle, and there were scorpions, millipedes, centipedes. There were a lot of exotic insects there. And there's a story that Maureen was held hostage by a single fly for hours until Richie, otherwise known as Ringo, returned to kill the bugs and dispose of all the carcasses. So she really hated the bugs. He had problems with food. You know, he'd run out of his Heinz beans, suitcase of Heinz beans that he'd brought. And, you know, they really missed their kids who were really, really young. One of those kids was born in like August of 67, really, really young child. So they really wanted to get back to their children. And also there was a little incident in India where Ringo got disillusioned because Mal Evans, who was their road manager, had snuck in some eggs for Ringo to eat. And then the staff of the ashram was caught burying the eggshells. And Ringo said, well, can't God see that too? So, yeah, burying eggshells, because eggs were not allowed in the ashram, on the ashram grounds. In fact, they weren't allowed anywhere in Rishikesh or in Hardwar because these are holy cities and you're not allowed to barter in any meat products or animal products except milk, but not eggs and not meat. Not allowed.
Yeah. And Ringo, in your book, he wrote, you'd have to fight off scorpions and tarantulas to try to get a bath, so there was an amazing noise in the bathroom. To have a bath, you'd have to start shouting, I'm having a bath now, and banging your feet. If not, all these people, all these animals would attack. And Mike Love was there, and there's a song the Beatles wrote for Mike Love's birthday that we love to play.
Happy birthday, Mike Love, I think.
Well, there it's Happy Birthday, Mike Love. And
a
sometimes
spiritual
it's called
regeneration.
Spiritual regeneration. Yeah, let's do that.
Like a thank you for a day, cause your children couldn't thank you enough.
Okay, that's the Beatles doing their best Beach Boy imitation. You brought up something, and I can't find it in the book, but one of George's songs that he had on the White Album, I didn't really know was about his time there.
Yes, long, long, long.
Okay. Tell me about that.
Okay, yeah. George Harrison, one of the songs on the White Album, in fact, the most favorite on Spotify with the 55 plus, that is one of the most popular songs on Spotify, A Long, Long, Long. And, you know, he says, it's been a long, long, long time. How could I have lost you when I loved you? It took a long, long time. Now I'm so happy I found you. How I love you. So many tears. I was searching. Now I can see you, be you. How can I ever misplace you? And so on. That song is about the search for spiritual awakening. It's a search for God, really, for God realization, for reunifying with God. He says, you know, near the end of the song, now I can see you, be you.
Let's take a listen to Long, Long, Long. We'd like to thank Omni Nashville Hotel, Kitchen Notes Restaurant, for sponsoring the show this week. We are talking with Susan Shumsky, who's written the book, The Maharishi and Me, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to From Me to You. Claudine Iannucci is here running the show for us. Leela Smith is here learning how to run the show for Claudine. And Susan Shumsky is here telling us all about The Maharishi and Me. It's a great book. You can get it anywhere books are sold, but if you think you're a Beatles fan and you want to know about the White Album, this is the way to go. Another song that came about there, of course, is, and we haven't talked about Sexy Sadie yet, but let's chat about that.
Ringo left India after 10 days, and we already discussed why he left. Paul left India after 1 month because he had come with Jane Asher, his girlfriend, and she had a theatrical commitment in London, so they left when it was time for her to go back. John and George stayed for 2 months. And there were three reasons why John and George left India. One of those reasons had to do with one of the female participants on the teacher training course. Her name was Rosalind Bonas. She was from Brooklyn. She was a school teacher. And he had met Maharishi in New York, and she could feel a certain vibration coming from him, and she wanted to experience that. She wanted to be close to him again so she could experience that. So she went to India to the course. She was a little bit disillusioned by the fact that it was a, you know, even though it was an Indian guru, you know, she's really shocked that he was teaching Hindu philosophy. I can't imagine how she would be shocked at that, but it's okay. So she was shocked and a little bit disillusioned about him. Meanwhile, she started having an affair with Alexis Mardis. Mm-hmm. And those of you who are Beatles fans probably know who that was. You know, he was a guy who portrayed himself as this great genius inventor, when in fact he was just a TV repairman and really didn't know much about anything, and none of his inventions ever worked. But anyway, he went to India, and he promised Maharishi that he would build a radio station that would broadcast Maharishi's message worldwide, and it was the size of a trash can lid and made out of spare parts that you could get in Rishikesh. I don't think so. So in any case...
And that's Magic Alex that you're...
Magic Alex.
And you had the best description of him, is he was Edison and... You had three inventors rolled into one. Marconi, Edison, and Bell rolled into one.
So Magic Alex was there. No one ever saw him meditate. In fact, he said that he was there for one purpose, to get the Beatles away from Maharishi. That was his express reason for coming to Rishikesh. So he was quite successful in doing that. What happened was Rosalind, apparently Maharishi made a pass at Rosalind, and Rosalind conveyed that to Alexis. And Alexis hid outside Maharishi's bungalow, and he, at least this is what he claims, and that he saw Maharishi hugging Rosalind. They both had their clothes on. You know, nothing really happened except for a hug. But after he saw the purported hug, which may or may not have happened, but probably did happen, then what happened was he told the Beatles about it. Beatles were terribly shocked because there was supposedly more than a hug, that Maharishi had really made a pass at Rosalind. And the Beatles discussed it all night long. And George didn't really believe Alexis, and he didn't trust Alexis. And Cynthia really didn't trust Alexis. In fact, she was very concerned about his Bengali effect that he had on John. And she really didn't believe it at all. But somehow, Alexis managed to convince the Beatles that this woman had been somehow violated, that Maharishi had made a pass at her. And so they were all shocked, and they wanted to leave, and Rosalind wanted to leave, and a couple other people wanted to leave, and they all left in a huff. And Alexis went to get taxis. It took quite a while to get the taxis. Meanwhile, Alexis was telling them, we got to leave immediately because this man is a black magician. Maharishi's evil black magician. So he went to get the taxis. And meanwhile, John wrote a song called Maharishi. Maharishi, what have you done? You made a fool of everyone. You'll get yours yet, and so on and so on. And in fact, he used some very nasty expletives in that song as well. And George said to him, you can't do that. You can't sing that song. You can't record that song, you know. So John changed the lyrics a little bit, and no longer was it Maharishi, it was Sexy Sadie.
And no. Here is Sexy
Sadie was not a woman, and no. And it was not about a woman named Sadie.
All right, here we go, Sexy Sadie.
Sexy Sadie, what have you done? Sexy Sadie, get yours yet. However big you think you are. However big you think you are. Sexy Sadie, oh, you get yours yet. We gave her everything we own just to sit at her table.
So tell us as best you can with your Sunday morning vocabulary about how McCartney came to write "Why Don't We Do It in the Road?"
Okay, well, Paul McCartney was in India and he saw a couple of monkeys making love. And as a result, he thought, gee, human beings should be as free and open about their sexuality as monkeys are. And that's why he wrote "Why Don't We Do It in the Road?"
Well, let's listen to that. Even though it's Sunday, and I think he's referring to "Why don't we pray in the road?"
Why don't we do it in the road? 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 No one will be watching us.
Speaking with Susan Chomsky, and we will definitely have you back if you choose to do so. We are amazed at your book, and it's called The Maharishi and Me, Seeking Enlightenment Through the Beatles Guru.
I'd love to come back, Richard. It was really fun to talk with you.
We'll see you soon, I hope, and we'll have you come to town and enlighten us all. So until then, it's good day, and thank you to Kitchen Notes Restaurant and the Omni Nashville Hotel for enlightening us with your wonderful food as we go into life. At Kitchen Notes, you don't have to eat beans. You can eat all kinds of different food. So Ringo might like it there. We'll be back next week. Thanks, Susan Chomsky.
Thank you for inviting me, Richard. I really enjoyed it.
For our last number, I'd like to ask your help. Would the people in the cheaper seats clap your hands? And the rest of you, if you just rattle your jewelry. Thank you. We'd like to sing a song called "Twist and Shout."
No! Thanks, Mo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.